What is going on, my friends? Tony Stephan here, back with another episode of the School of Success podcast. And today I'm joined by my friend, entrepreneur, Army veteran, and just certified badass, Chase Tuning. What's going on, man?
Certified badass. That's my most proud credential for sure.
That's it, dude. That's number one on the business card, right? Also have an MS, correct?
Yes. Yeah. BS, MS, and then a few other letters after my name.
There you go. So well-rounded expert here. What's going on, man? How's your day going?
It's going pretty well. Thank you for asking. Usually my Fridays are somewhat hectic, but today, I don't know, maybe I had more clarity around my schedule, and I'm right on time, man. Actually, I take it back. It was like 2 minutes late for you, so I apologize.
But no, that's all good. That's close enough, man. So we had the pleasure of meeting you just the other day. We were in Vegas at Jason Phillips' mastermind event. Tons of very successful, very cool people in that room. What I was so inspired to talk to you about is a little bit of your journey, your mission. You're also the founder of Ever Forward, which is like a dynamic brand. There's so many movements and podcasts behind that. So I would love just to start off to have you explain a little bit more about yourself. Obviously, like I said, there's the Army background, you're very well educated, and you have a powerful movement that's going on. So fill us in, man.
Yeah. I always get reminded, I guess, of all these different hats and these hats that I wear and, you know, lives that I've lived. So, thank you for always, anytime I do an interview or just talk to people, I'm like, wow, yeah, like I got a lot of stuff going on. So you said it, you know, the military background, I served 6 years active duty in the United States Army. I was one of those people in high school. I was like, do I want to go to college? Everyone else is going to college. Should I, you know, is that what you're supposed to do? And it just didn't really feel right. The military was kind of like a safe place for me to kind of figure it out. Also, it was very appealing, very big family legacy in my family, my dad, my uncle, and grandfather. Like the Tunings in the military go all the way back. We've traced it definitely back to the Civil War. I think even to like the American Revolution.
Wow.
So like,
that's awesome.
Yeah. It's like a 17-year-old guy. I was like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
let me keep it going, Dad. I got you.
Yeah.
I did that. I enlisted right away for 6 years. The job that I was looking at in the military intelligence community required a higher obligation. They were dangling a pretty nice enlistment bonus over my head at the time. Like, hey, give us 6 years. We'll give you 20 grand, which after taxes only came out to like barely 11 over like 4 years. So thanks, Uncle Sam. But So 6 years active duty in the Army. Wound up, which I'm sure we'll get into in the conversation here, going through a string of injuries. I got medically discharged, really gave me a newfound interest in truly knowing and understanding the human body, how we move, how we perform, and how to move and perform better. And so that sparked my interest to go to college, study exercise science, worked in a few different like private gym, corporate wellness, concierge, medical model stuff, you know, here and there over the years. Wound up going back to school because I thought I was going to stay corporate. Got my master's in health promotion. I went to a TRX certification, group exercise, certified health coach. All these things that I thought I had to accomplish to be more successful, right? Just got to get those letters after our name. And then, you know, fast forward, you know, full fast story here, you know, 2018, I've been self-employed since the beginning of the year, just kind of doing all of those things in my past, but just for myself, with my family, with my brother, and all things Ever Forward.
Dude, I love that so much. And yeah, you're right. We're going to have to like break down this, this story, because that was a very good condensed version of it. But so in the military, one of my best friends, I think we were talking about, yeah, we definitely did talk about this. One of my best friends, he was in my wedding. He did the same thing. He went to college, came out, and was like, man, what do I do now? And then he joined the Navy as an officer. And it's like, man, the sacrifice you guys have to go through to do that. Like, I know we are very grateful for all that. So explain to me, like, what were some of the challenges, obstacles, hurdles, or like big lessons you took away from your time in your service?
Yeah, really good question. The biggest things I took away from my time in service, I hate running.
that's a good one.
If you don't like cardio and you're joining the military, you're in for a rude awakening, that's for sure. But really from an early age, you know, again, I think a lot of people go into the military at different times. I think this day and age, more people go in at a younger age. I was technically 17 when I joined. And, you know, when you're 17, you don't know anything. You think you do. But I felt pretty well-rounded growing up. But going into the military, you're very, very quickly exposed and surrounded by people from all walks of life. Different colors, different races, male, female, you know, people at your level, below your level, certainly above your level, the ones yelling at you to do more push-ups. And so for very quickly, day one and every day in my military career, I was always around a variety of people, a diverse population, people from poor upbringings, rich upbringings, you know, you name it, I encountered them. But at the end of the day, we all wore green, you know, that's what we called it. We're all green. Doesn't matter from where we came, skin, you know, whatever. And it really showed me that that's what I think I wanted to really strive for in life, is that no one is better than anybody else. Some people maybe just work a little bit harder, but, you know, certainly getting out, I think I really carried that concept of, you know, we're all just people and we all can do amazing things, and it doesn't matter our upbringing, it doesn't matter our skin color, our race, whatever. You know, if we all come together to try to accomplish the mission, that's a little bit of military chase coming out. We all come together to accomplish the mission. It is possible, because we're all people. We all have the same potential.
I love that a lot. And I think that obviously had to be a huge advantage as you grew your coaching business and now your Ever Forward movement, to where, like you said, the diversity and being able to communicate and speak to and like work with a diverse group of people, like that's an invaluable skill. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, especially like you said, in this industry. And one of the things we do here at Ever Forward is our coaching services. And I mean, you know how it is, Tony. I mean, when you encounter a lead, a client, just talking to someone that you potentially are going to work with, they don't come from the same mold. That's for damn sure.
Right. Absolutely. You have to be able to relate it back to them. So how did that message, which you had, which I really love that we're all working together on the same mission to achieve the same outcome, regardless of where you come from, we're all humans. Like, how does that translate into what you're doing now as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, it's, I'll highlight, you know, what I just said about certainly engaging with different types of people as, you know, as clients, you know, when we come professionally to the table and we're working with them to serve them when they hire us. And certainly this year when I've been growing my team, you know, when I was going to transition out of my corporate job of being a health coach to just, you know, private health coach and trainer, I thought it was just going to be me, but it quickly grew. It was like a ready, fire, aim situation. Nice. And I was like, wow, like I really, if I want this to be successful, I need more people on board. And so it really opened up my eyes to, you know, like one of the things I say all the time when I was getting started in studying exercise science and, you know, being a trainer and all that, like I literally only thought I could do one thing with it. I thought I'm going to get this degree, I'm going to go work in a gym or maybe be a private trainer in a private gym. But I thought that was it. And then as I was growing my team and, you know, learning of different ways to serve my audience, I was encountering all these different types of trainers, power lifters, you know, high school athletics people, CrossFit. And we all have these different backgrounds, different educations, different certifications. But at the end of the day, our job was to serve our clients, to improve their way of life. You know, our kind of three pillars, our coaching philosophy and just brand philosophy is, you know, empowering people through improving their fitness, nutrition, and mindset. And I was like, Chase, you know, you do that your way with your background and certifications, but you know what? There's this person here that can serve someone that maybe you can't in a different way. And so it really opened my eyes as to just the caliber of professionals that are out there and the specialties that they have and the unique ways that they can radically change people's lives.
Dude, I love that. That's really, really good. That's really powerful. So obviously you faced some adversity along the line though, because like you said, this wasn't like when you entered the military, you didn't think you were going to go be in the health and fitness arena, correct?
No, I honestly didn't know what to think. I knew the military had a lot of options, and you know, like I said before, it was very much legacy, but it was never like forced down my throat. It's like, Chase, this is what you do. You're going to join and just do the military. My dad, he was prior service himself. He was in the Army, and he always just shared his experiences with me. And I was like, you know what? Like, yeah, boot camp's going to suck. Like, yeah, it's very physically demanding, but I was already used to that. I was very active as a kid, played sports. And so I was like, I can endure that. That's fine. but just all the perks, basically, I was like, you know, this is just a job. You know, it's a really cool, different, active job. And I was like, damn, I can join at 17. I can retire at 37. That's still very young. I can go on to the next season of my life and do whatever I want, you know, have a nice little pension, hopefully. And so that's, yeah, I mean, that was really kind of just my mindset going in. And once I got broken, I was preparing for a deployment a couple times, and I wound up just getting significantly injured in the war games before being even sent over, and tore my hamstring, my L4, L5 vertebrae just got, went, basically they went left and I went right kind of situation. Didn't wow. like break my back, but just really not a good situation. And then compounded with re-injuries, trying to get back on the deployment roster, duty roster too soon, just, you know, being stupid, sure. trying to just, you know, put a Band-Aid on a really big boo-boo. Right. I wound up just breaking myself even more. And long story short, had both my hips completely reconstructed. I was a patient for the last almost a year and a half. I was in the military. I got pulled from my duty station, put in a med hold unit. My entire job for that last almost a year and a half was just, hey, Chase, we're going to cut you open, you know, rehab. I had to learn how to walk again, go through the same process for the other hip. And then they're like, oh, you're no good to us. We're going to kick you out. Wow. So, yeah, it really shook my world. Like, physically, I was broken. Mentally, I was kind of broken. I didn't really know what to do, but I was like, you know, I have an opportunity now. So I still very much was in recovery mode. At the time I separated the military, I was like 23, 24, touring colleges on my cane, like this 23-year-old kid hobbling around. I had to have my mom come help me, like, do tours of colleges. You know, I even started, I think, selling my cane. And the reason why I chose the degree that I did was just because I was like, I need to learn what to do. I need to learn how to take this new version of me. I really need to understand the fundamentals because I don't want to have to go through this again. And that was what set me on the path of what I'm doing now.
Dude, that's crazy. And I had no idea. I didn't catch that story when we met. That's very, very powerful. And I think for so many people, like, they get faced with adversity. Like, literally, you got knocked down pretty hard. That's fair to say. And for so many people, they view it as like an end all be all, like a bad thing that they'll never be able to recover from. And I'm sure, like, God, dude, that must have been so hard for you sitting there, a year and a half recovery. Like, that's a very lengthy time. But you were able to reframe that. And like, that's a topic I talk about a lot. Like, Bedros Koulian was on the show and he talked about this. The ability to take what life gives you, which isn't always beautiful, it's not always a bouquet of roses, reframe it as the adversity is here to make you stronger. Like, one of my favorite books is, I think it's called Thick Face, Black Heart, which is a weird title, but it's from an Asian business author. And it just talks about, like, in that community, they are trained at a young age to seek out adversity, because without the adversity, there is no growth. And without that, like, powerful, painful experience, like, I think it's fair to say you wouldn't be where you are today. How did you overcome it, though? Because it's easy for us in retrospect to say that today, right, with where you are. But at that moment when you, I mean, you said, I was broken. That's a powerful word. Like, how did you get over, whoops, how did you get over that?
Yeah, really good question. Every time I share that story, especially on this type of platform and interview, I always get asked, most often get asked, you know, how, like, how did you get through that? And I will caveat this by saying, anyone who knows me from when I was a kid to now, like, I've always just had a good attitude, and I really credit a lot of that, all of that basically, to my upbringing. You know, my dad was such a phenomenal role model. My parents split when I was very young. So I was raised by my dad, my stepmom, and my grandmother. And so, like, I always had great role models. And so I'm very, very thankful for that. As a kid, I think growing up, you don't really realize what you have until you get to be an adult and you realize, wow, a lot of my friends are messed up. They had really bad upbringing. Bringings or whatever. So sure. I credit a lot of that to them. But at the same time, when I was broken, when I spent days in the hospital, when I spent weeks on bed rest, and I was hobbling back into formation, I couldn't even for a second wallow in my own pity, because at that unit, This is the Warrior Transition Unit. I was assigned to the Brooke Army Medical Center at Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio, Texas. It's literally just a place for broken soldiers to go to heal before the military sends us on our way back into our civilian life. And I'm not talking, you know, yes, what I went through was terrible and it sucked and it physically and mentally broke me in a lot of ways, but I would go up to formation with people that head to toe, like third degree burns, quadriplegics, people that were coming back, you know, with significantly less body parts than when they went over. And like, I was humbled every day I rolled up to formation. You know, if I was coming in a wheelchair, you know, I was like, damn, you know, Chase, you still have both your legs. Or, you know, these people that were just wrapped up, you know, looking like, not to sound childish here, but, you know, look like mummies. Like, you know, they were wrapped head to toe in gauze, just burn victims, just had been through such horrendous events. And every day was a humbling experience for me. So, I mean, probably without that, who knows, I might have been like, woe is me. You know, certainly months on prescription narcotic pain medicine doesn't help. You know, I even got to a point to where I had like an addiction. And so, I mean, I know people who have not recovered from that experience. And the situation basically didn't allow it, Tony. And so, again, I'm eternally grateful for that. And, you know, I actually said this on a recent interview. I really want to credit and honor those soldiers for their even greater sacrifice than me. You know, we all signed our life away on the dotted line, but some gave more than others. And so, you know, for them, you know, I thank you. And truly, you just being alive, you being present, very much so was a catalyst for me being able to maintain hope and be where I am today.
That's amazing, man. And that's something that, you know, I can relate to, in that there's always someone who has it worse, right? And like, no matter where you're at, there's always, I always say that gratitude's a choice. Like, you don't choose what the world gives you. You don't choose your circumstances. You don't choose what happens to you, but you can choose how you respond to it. And I think that's the cornerstone of anyone who's ever been very successful, is like, successful people go through a lot of shit, whether it's like, you know, physical, mental, combination of both, but it's the choice you make coming away from it, of how to choose, how to interpret the events, that makes all the difference. And you just chose to interpret it of, look at the people around me, look who have suffered more, and look what I still have and able to get over it. So that's very powerful, man. That's a very cool story.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, also at the same time, like luckily in that unit, and I think this is something that a lot of military people overlook, is that they don't begin to think about their next season of life, their civilian life, while they're still in. So, and a lot of that is to the fault of the military. But luckily, the unit I was in, like my last like 6-8 months, like they were preparing us, like going to seminars and classes and transition stuff. They were preparing us for civilian life again. So I again had a little bit more of a leg up on what was available to me, how I could more safely and effectively transition back into civilian life. You know, get enrolled for school. They allowed me time away to go back to Virginia to look at colleges and stuff like that. So I mean, again, I was, in a way, kind of being like groomed to go into this next season of my life right away, which is, I think the main point I'm trying to make here is that when these adversities happen to us, we can sit on them, we can let them fester, or like Tony said, you know, you can choose to have a change in that attitude, and that really does change most of it, if not all of it. But I'm a firm believer that if I had more time in between getting out of the military, or if I thought I was going to be able to stay in, or like I was contemplating college more, if I had more of that downtime, I mean, I went through a lot in that time, in the military, losing my father, he passed away in that time period as well. So if I had had more time to sit and fester, I mean, again, I don't know what would happen, but I certainly believe that by me taking action and choosing to put things in place in my life that I knew would serve me, again, kept that positive momentum.
Oh, wow. That's amazing, man. That's very, very powerful. Something, an interesting question for you that I'd love to ask is, what advice would you give to a college student, like a smart, you know, intelligent, go-getter college student about to enter the real world for the first time? And not only what advice would you give, but what advice should they ignore?
Yeah, you know, that's a very good, unique question. I worked in the corporate world for a long time, and I was in charge of hiring people, firing people. And luckily in my line of work, and I was always hiring, you know, other coaches and trainers. And I feel like people in our world, you know, Tony, people that are in like the health and wellness stuff, we were always, you know, in acts of service, right? We're here to serve people. So I never experienced this directly, but I did have a lot of friends that be like, you know, people get out of college now and they just expect to be walking into a job making like six figures. And they're like, well, what do you mean I have to start from the bottom? What do you mean I have to like,
right,
you know, earn my stripes, so to speak? And so I would say to someone about to go into the real world is just lower your, I'm not saying lower your standards, but lower your expectations. And that's going to sound a little harsh, but I think if you go into it as like, hey, this is my first job, I haven't earned the right for that high salary. I haven't earned the right to be, you know, treated like someone who's been here for 2, 5, 10 years. You know, go into it, like I said, I think a lot of us in our industry do, you know, have to go into it out of an act of service. Go into it as not to what they can give me, what can the salary give me, what can they do to boost my resume, but what can I do to serve my coworkers, my subordinates, my superiors, my company's vision. Because if you, like I use this all the time in my coaching philosophy, is, you know, start with the end in mind. Whatever goal you have, you know, you want to start that and think of that finish line at the same time. And that is going to help keep you constant. That is going to keep you showing up every day with that ambition. And that is what's going to set you apart getting started in the job world. I can certainly attest to that.
I think you're right. There's a huge sense of entitlement. And I think we can draw correlations over that phrase to even like health and fitness. So people are like, no, man, I just want to do the detox and I want to drop the 14 pounds in 14 days and I just want to be good. And then I can go out and eat whatever I want. But I agree. There is a sense of entitlement to where people want the outcome before the work. People want the proof, you know, and before they take action. Like how many times do you hear that in the entrepreneur world of like, I have this great idea. I have this passion. I have this business I want to create, but if I just knew I'd have some customers, or if I just knew I could make as much money as I was making right now in my full-time 9-to-5 job, I would make the jump. But like you said, it's like you have to lower your expectations to the reality of none of that comes before the work. The work comes and then the proof is followed afterwards. But I agree with that, man.
That's it. Yeah. Not to sound harsh, but you know, I think lowering your expectations without lowering your standards, because if you keep your standards as high as that six-figure salary, that's going to shine through. That's going to show your bosses. That's going to show your peers, you know, what you are truly capable of doing. That's going to show your potential. And that's going to help, you know, that's going to help you solidify that position so that maybe you can start there and end there. Maybe you can start there and that's your stepping stone into the next job. I would agree with that. And, you know, what's something that you should totally ignore? Oh, that's a really good question. Well, what advice should we just completely disregard? I think, again, I didn't experience a whole lot of this in my exact, well, actually I take that back. No, not in my department, but in one of my last jobs, like the corporation as a whole, there are a lot of different departments. I think too often in the corporate world, I'm talking specifically in corporations working for the man, whatever, that you think everyone is on your team. Like go into it, like don't just assume that everyone has your back. Because I promise you, at the end of the day, people are going to make sure that they are squared away. And if it means stepping on you, that's going to happen. So ignore the fact that you think everyone always has your back. Trust people, of course, until they prove otherwise. I firmly believe that. So don't be like a negative Nancy on everything. But I experienced quite a bit of that. You know, I thought we're all on the same page. I thought we're moving forward. And then all of a sudden, like, oh, no, this benefits somebody else. So they're going to go that route. So go into it with trust, but maybe have a plan B.
I like that a lot. You know, there's a book, and you maybe have heard of it or have read it, Robert Greene, The 48 Laws of Power. And he alludes to a lot of things. Have you read that?
Yeah, it's not one of those like a start to finish ones, but I've definitely combed through with some very like specific points on it.
It's not a start to finish book at all. None of his books are. I have all 4 or 5 of them, but it's something you have to like pick up, read a little bit, interpret and go apply and then, you know, reflect on it. But yeah, he talks a lot about that. So that's a very interesting spin to that answer. And I appreciate that. So yeah, obviously, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just saying it kind of goes against a little bit of like who I feel like I try to be and choose to be as a person. Like, you know, I always want the best in people. I always believe in people. But I'm talking specifically to your example of getting started in a workplace. You know, I hope people listen and hear that in that specific environment. I think that's really where you need to have trust and establish trust, but at the same time, be conscious of your own safety and security.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think that's perfect application to that question of coming out into the real world. So obviously with what you faced, like with the recovery and like you said, transitioning from the military to, you know, formal education and all that, like you probably dealt with a lot, obviously challenges, but feelings of distractions or loss of motivation from one time to another. How did you deal with that? Like when you feel overwhelmed, unfocused, or temporarily like a loss of motivation, what do you do to help yourself overcome that? Maybe things in the past or maybe things you do now?
Yeah. You know, it may not be fair to the audience or the person listening right now because they may not have this in their life, but I promise you, you can find it. You can create it. I am tethered to a higher purpose. I have, for those of you who know me or, you know, we've kind of mentioned so far, I have these two words that I live my life by every day, every moment, every second. It's ingrained in my DNA. I live a life ever forward. These two words that were instilled in me growing up as a child, my brother, my sister, my family, that our father got from his time in the military. Every unit you go to in the Army, at least I can speak, you have like a unit saying, a unit creed. In his first duty station back in the 116th Infantry Regiment, which goes way back to like D-Day, World War II, their creed was ever forward. And so he picked it up from the military. He brought it home with him, literally. And it was just something we always heard and helped guide us in, I think, the parenting. And then certainly once our dad passed away in 2005, you know, going through a lot of mental health anguish, and that will certainly drain your motivation like a mother. But sure. And then in the corporation, you know, being backstabbed multiple times, by losing clients, by not hitting your revenue goals, by like trying to do your side project, side hustle, and it fails. I stayed tethered. So I would always, you know, luckily my brother, he's always the business guy in the family. He kickstarted the brand to begin with. So I could just wear a shirt or I could, you know, look at a sticker. And then from there, you know, for me personally, like right now I keep my dad's dog tags. They're tied around my microphone boom arm. They were hanging from my rearview mirror. So every day, if I was having a shit day, if I wanted to, you know, jump for joy or just break down and cry, you know, I would hold his dog tags. And so I have this tether, I have this anchor to a higher purpose that reminds me that, you know what, Chase, this motivation drainer, this client you just lost, this experience you had at work that, you know, you lost trust in your coworkers or, you know, whatever it was. It was a reminder that this is all part of my journey. This is a part of my process. To quote one of my favorite authors, Ryan Holiday, this obstacle is your way. And this is what you have to go through in order to reach your greatness on the other side. And maybe tomorrow, maybe next year, maybe 10 years from now. But I just kept that reminder that my family and I and what we do with everything with EverFord, this is all part of our journey and it is not about us and we have to keep moving forward because we are carrying that flag. We are keeping that legacy going and honoring a great, great man, our father.
Mm. Dude, that was powerful. That was very, very good. And I think a couple things you said there, like number one, like when you know what you want out of life and when you, like you said, you're very blessed to have that. And I think for so many people, they don't have that purpose. They don't have that deep, like internal drive, but like when you can find something like that, or, you know, maybe I'll even challenge my last name. I think a lot of people have that. They know what that is.
Yes.
They're afraid to listen to it. They're afraid to go after and go get it.
Yes.
Because of all the other things we talked about, the uncertainty, the unknown, they want the proof before before they take action. But when you have that and you just like believe in it, and it was Steve Jobs that said, like, trust your heart. It already knows exactly what you want. It's like that gives you the motivation to push. That gives you the momentum to push on the days that suck. I mean, you and I we could sit here every, you know, for the next 2 hours and talk about the bad days that being an entrepreneurship like brings with it, the challenges.
Oh yeah, man.
The adversity. Like you said, you lose a client. Like, dude, when it's your own business and you lose a client, it feels so much more impactful than when you're working for someone else. Or like what you were talking about earlier, like I can't log into my email for the last 2 days. It's like,
yeah,
there's always something. But when you have that powerful phrase or that powerful belief, like for you, it's ever forward. It makes it so much easier. And you also kind of alluded to a bit of like environmental exposure and anchoring. So like those dog tags to you were powerful pieces that help motivate you during a rough day. And they're powerful, like just subconscious reminders there. Like I do the same thing in my office. There's like a little tag that says proceed as if success is inevitable. There's a book of the Steve Jobs, Walter Isaacson book there, Alexander the Great, other just like little triggers around me that like when I am having a bad day, it's like you can kind of tap into that. So that's powerful. And that could be anything. That could be like family heirloom, a book, a phrase. Like that's a huge takeaway from this, is like create that emotional trigger around you when you do have a rough day. Not if, it's when you do have a rough day, right? You have something to like, something that's bigger than you to draw into and tap into.
Yeah. And Tony, I'm sure you can relate, you know, when you're working with a client, maybe, you know, we have like a specific nutritional goal. What maybe comes out of your mouth is like, hey, we need to stack the conditions in your favor, right? We need to build up your environment so that your environment supports your goal, supports your mission. So if you have a pantry full of crap, odds are the statistics are you're going to eat crap. But if you do, you know, a healthy grocery haul, or you get rid of those things, like just having those things around you, you're already setting yourself up for more success. And I love what you're saying about having these little, you know, relics, if you will, around you, whether it's like an attaboy on a post-it note, if that's all you need on the mirror in the bathroom, like, you know, you're awesome, have a great day. You know, that's another reason why my wife is, I drive her crazy because I have like books everywhere and all these things. And so it's another reason why I collect books. You know, I love what's inside them, but my workspace here at home, I have my books to the right of me, and I can look over when I'm working, when I'm frustrated, or even if I'm having a great day, and I even just seeing the title of something that I know that I've read that gave me more purpose, that motivated me, that is a trigger for me to just, it lights another fire under my ass. And like, it helps so much. The dog tags, you know, and what you have in your environment, that's huge. And I would echo what Tony said for you listening right now is, you know, find something, find anything. You build every environment possible to contribute to your success, a post-it note, a dog tag, a motivational poster, a book, whatever, at home, at work. That's one small little thing can really start the ripple effect for positive, sustainable change in your life.
And there's science behind this too. Like, we're not just like rattling off like anecdotal evidence here. There's science that there's the hashtag science, man. The science that proves that is just the subconscious conditioning that even if you don't notice it, like your subconscious can like interpret it that it's there. And like you said, you're feeding off the energy from it, man. So dude, when I didn't have money, I would keep money. Like it would be like a dollar or a $5, like a,
oh, no way. I love that.
Yeah, I would keep money in my car. I'd keep money in my wallet. And I hate cash, but just like money in my, you know, whatever drawer, in a book, like that would be the bookmark, just as like a signal that like money is abundant. Money is abundant. It's freely here and it's going to be here. It's always going to be here. And, you know, not that my life is about money, but money is a vehicle to freedom, vehicle for abundance and impact. So
to serve your greater purpose. Absolutely. To make more impact.
That's it, man. So I agree with all that. So here's a great question I love to ask. What are bad recommendations in like our area? And this could be like entrepreneurship, business, coaching, nutrition, health, and fitness. Like what drives you nuts? Like what fires Chase up and just makes you say like, damn, I hate when people say that, or I hate when people do that. What would a couple of pieces of that content look like?
Oh man, I'm going to bash my own industry, but I've really come to like cringe at the term online coach. I feel like that's become passed around as a title, as a profession, very loosely. And, you know, everybody says, you know, if you can get 6-pack abs or a booty shot on Instagram, all of a sudden, boom, you're an online coach. And maybe it's just, you know, even the term coach, you know, we both have gone through formal education, certification, thousands of dollars, and thousands of hours, tens of thousands of dollars, to learn this craft, to master it. Well, not say master, but to put ourselves on the road to mastery, I would say. And you know, I think people don't understand that the coaching process, or having someone before you, certainly once you start paying them your hard-earned money, that they're not respecting that. They're not respecting the responsibility of that leadership position, that mentorship position, of the responsibility of another person. Because when you get down to it, you know, Tony, when you help people with their nutrition, me, when I help them with, you know, nutrition, fitness, mindset, whatever, like, we are dealing with people's lives. And it really bothers me when a thing that you and I and so many people listening right now, I'm sure, have worked so hard for. And you know what? I don't want six pack abs. Like, I enjoy an IPA and a pizza. So I'm very, very happy with my like 2.5 to 4 pack every once in a while.
Depending on the day, right?
Exactly. Exactly. You know, I am so happy and content with, you know, with my lifts, my fitness. You know, could I lose a couple pounds? Sure. Yeah. Is it going to make me any happier? Absolutely not. But I still know the impact and value that I can have for people. And so when other people, I think, disrespect that, in my opinion, and, you know, take advantage of that and sometimes even take advantage of people, it's providing false hope. It's, you know, I'm not trying to get biblical, but, you know, don't worship a false god, you know, whatever. Sure. So I think people just using that term and kind of taking away our respect a little bit, our credentials, I think sadly has become too common in this day and age.
I couldn't agree anymore with that. And again, you and I can ramble all day about this. It's like, it's the new cool thing to do. Like, I'm an online coach.
Yes. It's so trendy, right?
Yeah. And then I think even beyond that is like the new is I'm an online business coach is even becoming the bigger thing than that. But it's like, I love what you said, that it's an honor and it's a privilege to have someone's life in your hands. Like, nutrition, health, fitness, that's serious stuff. You can hurt somebody if you don't know what you're doing, and not only hurt them physically, like by telling them to go deadlift and they don't know how to, or whatever, like, you know, destroying their metabolism, but you can hurt someone emotionally. And I mean, I'm sure you've had this too, but like, I can think in the last 10 years of working with clients for me, like, how many people I've had come to me, like the phrase you use, like, broken by bad coaches who made them feel not valuable or just like subpar. Right? Or coach, because they couldn't stick to their bullshit templated diet that they gave them, their, you know, chicken and brown rice and salad diet, right? And it's like, it's such a responsibility. And that, exactly like you said, you have a human being on the other end of you, or the other end of your computer or phone or in person, whatever. If you don't take that with an absolute grain of like salt of respect and just like understand the value of that, you're not a good coach. And it's like, coaching is not for you. Anyone can give someone a diet. Anyone can give someone a meal plan. Anyone can give someone macros, a workout template, whatever. But like, coaching,
yes,
there's an art and a science to that.
You are so spot on with that. And that's another way that I think this term gets bounced around that really bothers me, is that you emailing someone like, hey, hit these macros and here's a workout, that's not coaching. That's you just writing good copy in an email that might help someone. Coaching is like, it's so much more holistic. I mean, again, I won't ramble here, but like, it is a process. Coaching is like, not like, tell me what you're eating, what you're not eating, what you're doing, what you're not doing, but it's like, what is your mental fortitude like when you wake up? Do you just hate life, or are you fired up? What are your relationships like? Did you just break up with someone? Are you, you know, in love? Were your parents divorced? What's your professional world look like? A true effective coach, and this may just be my style of coaching and maybe my training and my background and stuff. But all of those things are as equally important, if not even more, than your food log. Honestly, a lot of my clients, like, I don't even look at that because that doesn't serve our purpose. I know, like, yeah, if we put you on like this quote unquote meal plan, or we track your calories, does it provide good data? Yes. Will it maybe help us get more consistent in our nutrition and hit a certain like weight goal, body composition goal? Yes. But again, long-term, like, are you happy? What, you know, what are your biometrics? What's your labs? All of these things that, you know, a true effective coach, I think, needs to take into consideration. And it is draining. It is a lot of work, which I think is another reason why the term coach for someone who just like, yeah, give me your money and I'll send you a workout, it just, it irks me, if you can't tell.
Totally, man. And it's like you said, it's about something you drew upon from your own personal experience and where you're at in life right now. Like, it's about finding where people exist in their happy balance. And it's about creating a protocol and a program that they can stick to and feel really good about. Like you said, dude, if you wanted to, you could be shredded as you want, right? But right now in your life, you are happy with the balance you have created with you and your wife. You can have a beer and a, you know, like a slice of pizza or whatever, and feel good about it. And that's what's so important. I think bad coaches try to fit everyone into like their box. Like it's my yes. way. You're going to do the keto. You're going to do the clean eating. You're going to train 5x5, whatever. And you're going to fit in this box. And if you don't fit in this box, you're wrong. Like you're wrong. This is the way it is. Like my way or the highway. And that's the worst type of coaching. That's not even coaching. That's the worst type of advice and whatever you can give. So like, dude, I completely agree with that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I've even had quite a few clients that, you know, have started working with me and my team from, you know, coming from other coaches and other services and like, wait, what? Like they have this expectation of like all of these things you're supposed to have prepared like ahead of time. Like, oh, wait, you don't need to know like this about my diet or you don't need to like, yeah, we do our baseline consultation, of course, but like what good is it going to do me to have a standard onboarding protocol when I don't have any standard clients? You, your friend, your coworker, Johnny down the street, or maybe someone across the world, them getting started working with me or anyone on my team, you are completely different people. So why would it make sense for me to have the exact same process for you? Yes, certain things we have in place for like just to stay effective in our systems, but I mean, we need to get to know you. We don't need to get to know how to effectively write a consultation form.
Dude, I love that. I've never heard someone phrase it that way, but there are no standard protocols because there are no standard humans. That's badass. Is. I love that. That needs to be on a t-shirt, man.
You took my ramble and made me sound smart. Thank you.
There you go. Perfect, man. Well, dude, I want to respect your time. This has been great. We could go on all day, but first off, is there anything else? I mean, you've already given a lot of value. Your story is very, very good, man. And you've already been able to just demonstrate a lot of good facts here and giving people like actionable things to go take away. Is there anything else you'd like to add to this though?
Yeah. I mean, I would love to just, you know, kind of highlight and honor you and your work and your mission, just getting to get to know you more. I love your whole premise of, you know, I'm sure you got started in doing what you do because of your love of service and helping people. I don't think any of us in this health, fitness, wellness industry would be doing that because a lot of times it sure as hell ain't for the money. that, you know, maybe comes years later. But I love what you said about how like you didn't want to accept this norm for a job, an industry, a career. And to the person listening that maybe is just accepting that or thinking, you know, going way back to my story of like, oh, I'm in high school, guess I should go to college, guess I should get a job. Challenge the norm. Look into yourself. Like you, like Tony said, you already have this thing inside of you. Most of the time, I find most people already have their passion inside of them. They just don't know it yet. They don't know how to put it to purpose. One of the things we say over here all the time at Everforward is learn how to apply a purpose to your passion. And if you don't know what that is, if you think, well, how do I challenge the status quo? How do I be different? I'm not passionate about anything. What are my gifts? Ask someone else. I promise you there's one thing, if not a few things that you do exceptionally well that your friends maybe always come to you for relationship advice, or you're the guy when people have a question about nutrition or like, hey, is this healthy or not? Like they come to you because you're that guy, or you know, insert anything here, you know, do an inventory of the gifts that you probably already give to people, the gifts that people already receive from you. And it doesn't seem like a passion, doesn't seem like a gift because it's just you. It doesn't stand out to you because it's just, it's who you be. It's who you are. It's what you do. And then use that as leverage to put it to a purpose. So there is no reason why any of us should fit into a cookie cutter mold, why any of us should do the exact same thing that our parents did or our friends do. We firmly believe that anyone can do anything they want. It's just a matter of being willing to get uncomfortable and being willing to then get comfortable with being uncomfortable and put that to purpose. So, you know, Tony, hats off to you, man, for challenging that and just living your truth. I love it when I see people just owning their truth, being themselves, their true and authentic self, and then using that as a way to serve others. So thank you for what you do, man.
Yeah, likewise, brother. I appreciate that. Like we were talking earlier and it kind of reminded me why this podcast is here was, like you said, I was like you know, in college, saw what everyone else was going the route with dietetics, like going to hospital, going to food service, going to long-term care. And I'm like, damn, I don't want to do any of those three. And I would look and search for resources of like, you know, entrepreneurs, dietitians, doing different creative things. And there is nothing like that. So it's like, that's why you're here on this talk. That's why every other successful person's here. And that's why this talk, this podcast, this movement is here to show people like school success. Like you don't have to follow, and it's like a play on words. You don't have to follow that traditional route. Like when you know, like you said, you put it so eloquently, like you know your truth, you have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable, take action, and then just go create that and giving those resources to show that. So I appreciate that, man. I couldn't agree more. If people want to connect with you, consume your content, which they absolutely should do, where should they go? How can they find you?
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of a one-stop shop for everything me and Ever Ford that my brother and I do. You can just go to chasetuning.com. We have links to the apparel, the coaching, the podcast, all there. But if you really want to get engaged with me, and I'm very, very active on Instagram, you can find me at chase_tuning. Last name is CHEWNING, chase_tuning.
Perfect, man. And I will link to all that in the podcast description. So dude, thank you so much for taking the time. We had to reschedule this one, but I'm glad we did. And it's just been very impactful, very powerful stuff. I took a lot away from this. I know everyone else listening will do that as well. So thank you so much for your time, man, and for sharing your story and sharing your journey here.
Yeah, absolutely. The privilege was all mine. Thank you so much. Welcome back from your travels. Congratulations again on the recent nuptials. For the audience listening right now, if you want to hear a little different side of Tony, stay tuned. Everford Radio is going to have him on very soon.
Oh, dude, appreciate that. But yeah, man, it was great seeing you in Vegas, and we'll talk soon, brother.
Thank you.